Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros live on bbsradio.com. And yes, we are live tonight, very live and very excited. This is going to be a very wild ride tonight. So everybody, strap yourselves into your seats, because tonight we have author, filmmaker, photographer, master energy tracker. That wild tantra man, Lawrence Lanoff, is back with us tonight live. And Lawrence, first of all, I want to say happy birthday, brother.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sorry that I have to use this tired adage, but it's true. Not only am I getting older, I'm getting better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Better every day. And
it's amazing, you know, you spend so much of your life, learning so much crap when you're young. And I finally feel like in my mid-40s, I'm starting to enjoy some stuff after getting my ass kicked for, 40-some years. I'm like, oh, man, okay, I'm finally starting to figure a couple things out.
Yeah, it's like you have to spend the first couple of decades getting your head full of shit, and then you got to spend the rest of it trying to unplug all that stuff.
You know, it's true. I mean, I think that was probably the biggest thing for me, Stephen, is I don't know when it was. It was somewhere just around 40. I think once I survived my 40th birthday, I was like, you know what, you fuckers, if I'd made it this far, I don't owe anybody anything. You know, it was like, I've made it. I've made it to 40. I'm halfway, at least, nearly halfway through my life. And, there's something that happens about that. And it's funny because it really is the basis for all of the work that I'm doing now in my life. Because, I guess there comes a point where it's like, you just don't care anymore. What is somebody's going to say, oh, I don't like what you're doing. Oh, okay, well, join the line. Join the club. In fact, I think there's an entire membership that meets late at night in New York called the I Hate What Lawrence Is Doing Club.
Well, let me just say that I am not a member of that club because I love what you're doing.
Thanks, man. I know. It's so awesome. I really feel a kinship with you about that because, I think you're one of the people, I figured when I wrote my book, A Course in Freedom, when I wrote that book, I figured I wrote it for 10 people. Mm-hmm. And I consider you one of the 10, man. I mean, you were one of the first people who were just, you were just like, I really like this stuff. Of course, most of the people that read it, in fact, I would say, seriously, when I wrote that book, it took me 4 years to write.
Wow.
Because basically I was scared shitless for the first 2 years. Because I was like, oh no, I'm going to write this stuff and people are going to be so upset. And I was wrong about that, actually. They were super upset.
Yeah, what were some of the things they said to you?
Well, it's funny. I mean, the issue really became and has been around this issue of mythology.
Yes.
The big realization I had, Stephen, the one that really began to rock people's world the most, mainly because it rocked my world. I was in Sedona, and I don't really talk about this a lot, but I'll give you a little, little quick history here. I was in Sedona, Arizona. I had been meditating with a friend of mine, and this was a friend of 20 some years, and we knew each other really, really well. We had been meditating for about a good solid 2 weeks, and then he left and I was alone, and I was just ruminating on things, and something happened. I was sitting there and I just wasn't happy with the answers that we had for things. And And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take all this investigative meditative skill, and I'm going to apply it to my own brain and see what I find out. And that one decision, right, of shifting from sort of this platonic, energetic, unseen world, shifting from that, like, okay, I'm going to focus there looking for this invisible world, and instead I'm going to focus it on what I can tangibly track, which is my brain. And that is where things completely fell apart for me. That's where everything really radically changed. So I think that was somewhere around 2001, 2002. And that was really the beginning of extracting myself out of all of this bullshit and, into kind of what I call now kind of just, you know, reality with a small r, you know, just dealing with life and all of the things that were predicted, you know, that all the predictions that people said and made and all the stories I'd heard about enlightenment and awareness and awakening and all of that stuff were eclipsed by stepping into reality. So that's kind of the paradox of what I came to, like in a weird way, by letting go of all mythology, I really found myself in the expanse of freedom, and that in fact is what I, you know, spend a lot of time teaching about now, whether that's psychological freedom or sexual freedom or, you know, spiritual freedom. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's like all of your problems come from some freaking myth somewhere that you inherited from some idiot who made something up or bought something that somebody else made up. And I hate to be so brutal about it, but ultimately that's what it comes down to.
I think you're absolutely right.
You got a whole bunch of people who have made up a lot of stuff. And like anything, man, you know, things are made up tens of thousands of years ago, and they're like viruses. They just don't go away.
Yeah.
So we're still arguing about stuff that some knucklehead came up with, you know, 10,000 years ago while he was cracked out on some hallucinogenic or hadn't slept or food deprivation. Who knows what sleep deprivation came up with some crazy idea. And here we are 10,000 years later still dealing with the same freaking idea. So there you go, man. And that's, so what people said is they were freaked out because it's like, you know, people would really rather die than consider the possibility that what they believe is wrong.
Right. Right. So many people are willing to die and to let other people to die for the perpetuation of their myths, of their beliefs.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And you know, I think I had mentioned this on our last show a little bit about kind of the various buckets of mythology.
Yeah. It's worth repeating. Let's talk about that.
Okay. I mean, I can keep that. Do you want to do that right now? You want me to?
No, let's go to the buckets and then continue what you're saying.
Okay, so the buckets are really simple. I mean, and let me just tell you that I use the buckets as a way of helping people negotiate mythology, because all mythology, all religion, all spirituality, all of it falls under one of these buckets. And it that blew my mind. I mean, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. Because there are so many forms, you know, so many stories, so many religions. It's kind of hard to believe that they can all fall into, you know, four categories, but they do. And I've been working on some new stuff, which I'll share with you real quick, which I call sort of the solar mythology and the lunar mythology. And those are like the two cores that everything comes out of. So there's sort of four buckets, and then there are these like two core ideologies or belief systems that everything else flows out of. So bucket number one is basically what I call the fuck it bucket. And it basically says, you know, the world is the way it is. We must accept it, the good and the bad, the right and the wrong, the good and the evil, all of the wholeness of the world, we must accept the way it is. And that's very much kind of an ancient people's mythology. It's very much a native mythology, because it basically said, hey, we don't understand why the gods, you know, flooded our village or killed our crops or whatever, but in the flow of life, that's part of life, and so we must accept that. And I think that was Joseph Campbell's kind of mythology that he aligned with towards the end, was this just, you know, you have to say yes to all of it. And that's an interesting mythology. It's cool. It's interesting. It's another load of crap, but it's still a good mythology. And so, you know, you kind of funnel into that. The second mythology is the mythology of good versus evil. And pretty much I'm going to have to say 70 to 80% of the world mythologies fall under that. And that's basically, you know, there's good and there's bad, and we're in a struggle. We, obviously you and me, Stephen, the good people are in a struggle over the bad people. And from there, you just fill in the blanks. I mean, it's everything from space aliens to, you know, light and dark and, you know, different races, different tribes, all of this stuff fall under the, you know, religious mythologies. Certainly this war of ideology we're engaged in right now in the Middle East, which is basically the, you know, two different versions of good versus evil, colliding. Right? But it's the same story. You know, there's good things and there's bad things, and that's it. So that's bucket two. Bucket three is my favorite. It's a derivative of bucket two, and it basically says, you know, I'll accept you as long as you do it my way. It's kind of the my way or the highway bucket. And the problem with that bucket, of course, is that gives rise to all of the religious and tribal and, you know, border killing that we have going on. Because it basically says, either you believe, you know, you're either with me or you're against me.
Yeah.
That's the bucket three mythology. And, of course, if you're against me, then you die or you go to hell or, you know, whatever the specific mythological construct is. And then, you know, and what's interesting about bucket three is, I mean, that's basically everything. You know, bucket three is everything. It's just like, man, it's just everybody's like, you know, are you a vegetarian or are you not a vegetarian? Are you organic or are you not organic? Or are you raw foodist or you're not a raw foodist? The world would be a better place if everybody believed in Tantra, if everybody believed in sex. Then the world, you know, it's just that kind of like matter or the highway. And then finally, the fourth bucket is really simple. It's just the delusion that science is somehow outside of this kind of mythological construct. So it's the delusion that science is somehow objective. And of course, you know, scientists every day with their mythological thinking interpret data to prove their mythologies.
Right.
You know, there's a whole bunch of science. You know, quacks all the time. They'll pick a piece of science and interpret the data to prove their quacky theory. So, you know, we saw a lot of that with, I'm going to piss some people off, but, you know, we saw a lot of that with The Secret. We saw a lot of that with, what's the other one that was popular? With The Bleep. That was a classic one of taking some pseudoscience about quantum physics and quantum mechanics and applying it to beliefs and all that. And
right.
There we go. So the myth of science. And then actually we're in on bucket five between you and me and our audience. Bucket five is basically what I call the way it is bucket. It's just kind of the, you know, the way it is. It's just kind of like gravity. It is what it is. You know, it's just, it's the is what it is bucket. So anyway, there you go. And I came across these buckets, Stephen. It just didn't come to me all in one night. I mean, this was really, really months and months and months of ruminating on all of these similarities. And I realized, wow, they all fit into the same kinds of things. And each one of them has a specific kind of shame, blame, guilt associated with it. And those were the themes, man.
Yeah, it's just every time I hear you speak on the buckets, it's just like, just going through it one more time. And it just really, it creates like a, wow.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly, man. That's what I want. And I don't care what subject we're applying it to. That is the basis of my work. And it does piss people off because people don't want to think about, your little teeny belief system it can be in a bucket. No, it's like, it's so easy for us to see other people's mythology. It's like, we can look at that whole thing of the, there's sort of an idea, I guess, in Islam that when you go to heaven, if you martyr yourself, you're a male, you get to have 99 virgins or whatever, because I don't know the exact detail, but right. We can look at that and go, oh, that's so ridiculous, but it makes perfect sense that women came from a man's rib and was tempted by a talking snake who gave it an apple that kicked us out of the Garden of Eden. That all makes sense, but flying yourself into a building so you can have 99 virgins, that's crazy. I mean, I don't get the whole virgin thing anyway. I mean, I'm like, why would you want to have sex with somebody who has no experience?
Right.
What the hell? That's crazy. But anyway.
Well, as we talked a little bit about your birthday, and I sent you a little something for your birthday that I thought you would really appreciate from our mutual friend Richard Metzger, which basically said that 2012 is bullshit. What would you like to talk about 2012 today?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. For any of our listeners, this is a rare call, and this call is actually going in a little bit different direction than I expected, but I'm happy because I really like, Stephen, that you give me the freedom to, to talk about this stuff. Even though it's Mondo Eros, I assert to you that you cannot feel truly erotic in your body until you start to break free of all this bullshit.
Yeah.
We spend so much energy in our mythological delusions. It's like, to me, it's like brain power. You only have so much memory in your computer, and it doesn't matter how much you upgrade that memory. I'm constantly trying to give myself more RAM. It doesn't matter. It gets occupied. So what the hell are you going to occupy it with? And 2012 is one of those things that I think is truly one of the most ridiculous things ever. It comes circulating around, I was born in, I was born in 63. And so this thing has now come around. I think I've seen a version of 2012 come around about 12 or 13 times. It's basically, I heard the first thing about the Mayan calendar coming to an end when I was, I was young. I was like six. And, somebody said the world was coming to an end. It was, one of those guys was, there was sort of a correlation between the Christian calendar at the time and the people who were waiting for the second coming. Jesus and the Mayans, and so they were like, oh no, this is a special time, and there's an astrological thing happening, so this makes it different from any other time. And I was like only 6 years old, and man, I cried. I was like, the world's coming to an end, I'm so sad. And there was this crusty old World War One vet who was babysitting for me at the time, and I was sitting in my chair crying. And he grabbed me, and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, the world's coming to an end. I was told that, I think I called it the Yayan calendar is coming to an end, and Jesus is going to leave bad people, and and I'm like crying. He grabs me. He literally picked me up, slapped me in the face and said, "You are 6 years old. The world is not coming to an end. Go outside and play with your friends." And I was like, "Oh, you know," and you know how little kids are like, "Oh, okay." And, you know, I went down and played. And that was like kind of my first Mythbuster right there.
Yeah.
That guy was the first one who really made me go like, huh. You know, and I heard those stories over and over again, and I was really a true believer at one time. I mean, I believed that stuff hook, line, and sinker. But the only difference that I noticed between me and lots and lots and lots and lots of other super intelligent people is I have no problem admitting when I'm wrong, and I have no problem retaining critical thinking. So if I make a prediction that something is going to happen and it doesn't happen, I don't go, "Oh my God, I'm a bad person," or "I must not have been in tune," or "the infinite didn't tell me because I'm not quite ready." That's bullshit. No. I look and I go, whatever voice I was listening to or whatever I thought I heard was obviously not correct. And so I don't have to pay attention to that voice anymore. How cool is that?
That's absolutely.
So I've always, and I've always been critical like that, man. I've always been like, "Oh, that was a load of bullshit." I talk to God, you know, because I'm a meditator, man. I meditate and I have no talking to God and the universe and anything. I can tune into pretty much anything and be like, "Let's have a conversation." But I began to realize that when I would ask for specific data, provable, replicatable data, that it would never come. And then I realized, you know, I'm probably just talking to my own brain.
Right. Right.
And I'm okay with that. Like, once I realized that, I was like, "Oh, that's cool. I'm talking to my own brain, and guess what? So is, you know, so is Jesus. So is Muhammad. So is, you know, Krishna." I mean, you know, they were talking to their own brain. The only problem is they took that shit too seriously and started basing whole lives and religions on that, and of course then you get into the mess we're in right now.
Right.
So, you know, our brain is not functioning properly. You know, it really isn't. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the brain. It's a very unstable place. So you can, it's very easy to take a mythological symbolic image like the end of the world and begin to think that that means that, you know, wow, this is real. When really it's just a mythological image. I mean, you know, we all, my number one kind of blow up the myth of 2012 is like, you're not that important. You know? You're just not that important. Like, you think the biggest event in the history of humankind, the end of the world, is going to happen in your lifetime because you're so important. Right? Of course it is. You're so important that the biggest event in all humanity is going to happen soon. 2 years. Because you're important, you know? And so you're going to have a front seat to the end of the world. And because, of course, you think the right way and you're, you know, you're aligned with the good forces of the planet, bucket two, that you will be saved. Well, welcome to, you know, every religious story that there is. So it's just another version. It's basically, you know, it's basically Armageddon, but for New Agers.
Right.
You know,
that's exactly what
drama.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And we like drama, man. We're all, you know, we're clearly addicted to reality TV. I mean, how much better reality TV can you get than the end of the world? It's like, oh, yeah. Front seat. So anyway, 2012, I mean, come on, you know, save your energy. I say, you know what? Self-pleasure more. Have more sex. Play. Eat some good food. Go out to some restaurants. You know, save your energy. Save your mental energy. It ain't going to happen. Ever. You're not that important. And you can play this on December. You can play this thing on December, you know, 31st, 2012, and you'll you know, you'll be able to play it the next morning. We're all going to be here. Nothing is happening. And the bullshitters who are making their money off of this stuff are to, you know, come up with some lame-ass excuse like they always do, like, oh, well, it happened in another dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
It took place in a parallel reality, in an alternate timeline.
Exactly. It's perfect. And that's you know what? Hey, dude, that's a blanket excuse. That really works perfectly. It's too bad it doesn't work, like, to pay a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you could run up a nice big bill at a sushi bar and just be like, oh, you know what? I paid that in an alternate reality. We'll see how well that shit works that way as you get your ass locked up in prison. You know, look here with some reality here, man, and save your mental energy.
Yeah, you know, I never really bought into that. I never believed, especially like going back, 10, 12 years when the I Am America map. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
When that craze was at its height, I never believed in it. I always thought it was going to be more psychological, and the breaking down of our belief system, that was going to be shattered. But I had never believed in the idea that, that the actual continent of, I'll tell you one of my stories, okay? Okay.
Sure.
I was, and this is Mondo Arrows, but it's also my show, so I can go off track if I want to. I was living in Virginia Beach in the early 90s, and of course, Virginia Beach is the home of Edgar Cayce, where the great prediction was made that in 1998, 1999, California was going to go into the ocean, break up, go into the ocean. I had a hard time believing in that. One night, and I was sitting, I was just sitting in my apartment, wasn't doing anything. I could hear the sound of a voice of a man crying, and I could hear it clairvoyantly. And I tuned in to this man, and I said, "Who are you?" And he says, "I am this one called Edgar Cayce, and I'm upset because this prediction is no longer accurate. Please tell the world this is not going to happen." I said, "You know what you're asking me to do?" So anyway, I won't mention names, but there was another psychic living at the time who said that she had contacted Edgar Cayce and that California was going to go down in 1995. Well, here we are, 2009, 10 years, 15 years later, and California is still here. Now, who knows? Maybe they were talking about the economy.
There you go.
Maybe they were talking about the economy. It was a really reference to the economy. We didn't really mean the actual land.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a great way to sidestep a prediction. It's perfect. It's a great way around it. No, what I really meant is this.
Yeah, you misinterpreted. I wasn't talking about the land. I was talking about the economy. You got that wrong.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, it's awesome, man. It's like, it's really fun when you start to realize this stuff because it just gives you a lot of space. You know, it really frees up your mind and your energy to just spend it in ways that are more pleasurable, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I think sitting and worrying about death is probably one of the greatest wastes of time ever.
It absolutely is. You know what? I'm making it my intention right here, right now, to get away from that. And I really want to. And I do my best. Let's talk about Tantra, and let's talk about your experiences recently in the Catskills of New York.
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, first of all, Tantra is filled with mythology, and that's entertaining. I mean, quite frankly, there's a lot of story, because I think people have a hard time just accepting their sexual desires and accepting pleasure. You know, it's just too hard. It's like if you could just, if you could just say, hey, I enjoy having sex, and and I enjoy experiencing orgastic pleasure in my body, and I'm okay with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we have a really hard time in that, so we create lots of mythologies. So when you get around, the Tantra community, there can be lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of very sweet stories, and they're really nice, and they're all well-intended, and they all fit into bucket one, bucket two, or bucket three. And, basically, I just see, like, some very sweet people who just want to have fun, and Tantra kind of gives a good forum for that, because you can have fun, you can communicate and share ideas and all of that, and that part is awesome. I mean, I love that. I just wish we could just kind of be more straightforward about it and say, hey, we like sex and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of like wild Tantra's Tantra. Tantra is, we like sex and we're okay with that. It's okay.
Yeah, let's go into a little more wild Tantra.
Yeah, that's kind of the perspective I was coming from at the conference, is just, sharing a little bit about what I so enjoy about sexuality and sexual energy. I mean, one of the things that I really like to do is take people on these, big energetic adventures, like what happens if you stop with all of this energy being expended on ridiculous things like 2012 and, all your guilt and shame around your genitals and worrying about dying and going to hell and all this crap. Like, if you just extract yourself from that, there's a lot of energy for fun and,
yeah,
and enjoyment. And, one of the things I love to do, which I did, is I just take people on these energetic adventures of just unbridled sexual energy, and get the whole group moving. I think there were about 40 or 50 people in the group that I had, and it's just so much fun. It's like a tornado of sex and orgasm and moaning and breathing, and it's awesome. It's really an awesome scene. So I got to do that. That's kind of like I like to take people into that world and just really take them. Essentially, it's a mixture of trance and meditation and breath and yoga and tantra, all mixed into one, and it's pretty incredible. So I got to do that adventure, and I met some really awesome people.
Right. Who were some of the awesome people you met?
Well, I got to hang out with Dr. Betty Dodson, and that, I have to say, she's 80, and she loves her, Betty's all about the clit. She is just all about the clitoris. She is like, stroke it, lick it, make it feel really good, and vibrate it, and, that's her thing, man. She is all about the clit, and she's 80. The woman's 80. She looks so amazing. And, of course, she loves her orgasms. I mean, I think she's got the right idea. She's like, I have unabashed orgasms on a very, very regular basis. And, she looks fabulous, and she is just, she is essence vinegar, man. She is unbelievable. She got up. And I really feel like in meeting her that I've met kindred spirit,
Yes.
Because she's very no bullshit about sex, and I feel the same way. I mean, I really do, and it just felt so good to hear somebody, very refreshing to hear somebody at a different phase of their life who still feels great about her body, still feels great about sex and sexuality and orgasms and the pussy and her clitoris, and is happy to teach people, teach women specifically about that. I mean, wow. She's a powerhouse. And I have the pleasure and honor to spend a fairly good amount of time talking and sharing ideas and really hearing what she had to say, which was just a blast. And of course, the best part was she has this whole thing. Betty is involved now in a First Amendment argument that it looks like may go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Very interesting, very, very interesting article, very interesting argument that has to do with constitutional law and the right, you know, basically issues of privacy and pornography. It's great. It's going to be such an awesome battle. Here's this 80-year-old woman who has some very strong opinions about women's rights and the right to express herself, and this is going to show up in our, you know, in the U.S. Supreme Court over the next, I don't know, those cases tend to take a long time to actually be heard, so, you know, figure the next 5 to 10 years, but it's going to be amazing. It's going to be quite an event. You know, basically, here's Granny wanting to talk and teach about her clit, and you know, how is her speech going to be controlled, especially if it's instructional and educational? So that was awesome too, Stephen. I just love that stuff.
Oh, I love her. She was one of my best guests, and it was just such a fun show to do with her, and also just to trade emails with Betty is just it's one of the, I think it's one of the best parts of having worked at Sexy Spirits and continuing to be there, is not just meeting Betty, but all the people who I meet, including you. But especially someone like Betty, who's sort of been like a hero of mine, and just to be able to trade emails with her and talk and stuff like that, truly amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And actually, I owe my connection with her to you, because she wrote that article about One Taste. She blogged about One Taste, and I just was so appreciative and really 100% agreed with her on her statement. And I was like, I'm so glad that somebody with a substantial voice in the sex community is coming out and speaking clearly on the subject of, you know, sexual occultism, and I really I loved it, and so we connected via email, which was great, and then had the opportunity to meet face to face and talk, and, you know, again talk story and share ideas, and it was really good. I knew we were going to get along great. She wasn't sure what category of woo woo I fit in, you know. So I was sitting in her room before thing got started. I think she and her business partner had just arrived, and we were just sitting, chatting a little bit, just hanging out, and she said to me, so Lawrence, she said, so what do you call this thing? And she put her hand kind of on her pants, and she said, what do you call this thing? What do you call the woman's wee wee? Do you call it like yoni, or what do you call it? And I said, I call it cunt. And she looked at me, and she looked at me, and her eyes got wide, and a huge smile came across her face, and she high-fived me, and she's like, yeah, it was awesome. I was like, okay. She's like, that's one of my favorite words ever. And then she told me the story of just hilarious stories on different times when she had said the word cunt in public and in talks, and you know, these are words that I love because they're so incendiary, and they strike horror in people and create a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And really, that's my whole point in my teachings, is to illustrate to people that you know, that if you take a word, you know, a symbol, in this case we'll use a cunt. You know, you take that word, and it has all of this drama and meaning and story and whatever and history and everything from, you know, everybody just has story about it. That right there is a demonstration of the power of mythology.
Right.
Because it's just a word. You know, it's a word. C-U-N-T. It's just an arrangement of letters, symbols, and yet it has all of this energy and feeling and emotion. There's another word like that. Slut. You know, slut, same thing. Oh my God, she called me a slut. He called me a slut. I don't want to be a slut. These are symbols and myths that literally bind you up, handcuff you, gag you, and stuff you and cut you off from your genitals. That's
right.
The power of sexual mythology. You know, we were just talking about religious mythology earlier, but sexual mythology, which of course is sort of informed by religion, you know, has the same function. I mean, basically sexual mythology, which falls under the same categories of buckets, sexual mythology basically just cuts you off from your genitals. It cuts you off from your sexuality and from your pleasure. And that's its purpose.
Yeah.
You know, so I love using incendiary words. I love using words that piss people off and create energy in their body, because that is the power of mythology.
Well, okay, we're flying our B-52, and we're going to zero on our targets now. Let's drop a bomb on some sexual myths tonight.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good.
What's the one? What's the first one you want to bomb?
Well, you know, I mean, seriously, I think we need to bomb Tantra as a whole. I think it's time to just blow that story up. I think we really need to be more adult in our sexuality. And I think if we can just kind of come to terms with the fact that it's okay to like and enjoy sex, you know, that it's like, we love sex, that's okay. And by adding these different bizarre components, we really obfuscate and create confusion and guilt and shame around human sexuality. And quite frankly, I've had enough of it. And there's all these people who, you know, who claim, they're like, oh, well, I'm trying to do this to help people feel less shame and more free in their bodies. But they do so in tantric constructions that end up creating guilt and shame.
Right.
So, you know, let me give you an example. In Tantra, there are certain kinds of sex which are good and certain kinds of sex which are bad. Well, guess what that is? I'm going to give you this. What bucket is that?
Bucket one.
Bucket two.
Bucket two, right.
The bucket of good and evil. You know, and it's like, it's so fucking predictable, Stephen. It's just, I really, after a while, I'm like, can we please just stop this? Because all we're doing is we're basically doing born-again Christianity around sexuality when we do Tantra.
Yeah.
Because we start to, like, you know, we create the rules and laws that we have to follow, and if you don't follow those, it's not really tantric, and that's tantric, but that's not tantric, but everything is tantric. But not really. You know, and it's like all this double talk, and it's like, really? Can we just not be adult in our sexuality? Can we not just, like, be okay with the fact that we love sex and we're okay with that? You know? And, you know, there are so many people, I think it was Kinney that said, when it comes to sex, there is no normal. And that's been my experience. I mean, I've counseled people and done, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of sessions with people over the years. I've done quote unquote DACA practice and, you know, different sexual teachings and all of this stuff over the years, and basically it comes down to the same thing, which is that people are obsessed with what is normal.
Yes.
And when it comes to sex, there is no normal. Yet that's what people are obsessed with. And so Tantra creates a different kind of normal, but it's still a box of what is normal, that if you're outside of that box, you're no longer normal. Well, welcome to the world of guilt and shame and blame. And really, that's the problem with any kind of sexual belief system. So, you know, for me, I'm sort of a reluctant Tantra person. I use the word because people understand it. But yet there's so much posturing. You know, is it Neo-Tantra? Is it old school Tantra? Is it Tibetan Tantra? Where did it come from? And what was it originally? And, you know, so you have factions of people within the Tantra community arguing about what's right. You have people who don't talk to each other because they don't agree with the particular Tantra they're teaching. I mean, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. It's like, what's the difference between that and, like, you know, this church here and that church there and the way over here and these group of born-again Christians over there? It's just they're having the same tribal discussions but around sex. And so, you know, there's occasionally there are people who try to, like, unify or share ideas, but there's no unification going on and there never will be. We're human. We don't unify. We find difference and contrast, and we amplify those and contrasts, and we make a big deal out of them. Bucket two, bucket three, bucket two, bucket three. You know, my way or the highway. So, you know, that's, I would like it if we could, you know, if there were more of us who are educating about sex, not being gurus about sex, not being you know, I know it all and I have the way and I've got it worked out and, you know, you have to do it my way and then you'll have enlightened sexuality. That's a load of bullshit. You can't get any more bullshit than that. You know, and then the problem with sex as well is there are all these, there are like four different tracks of sort of, you know, that a lot of sexual mythology and belief system has come from. And so it shows up in different forms, but basically it's the same stuff, you know, and we are shaming and guilting people in different ways. And we're teaching them new distinctions and then having them feel guilty because they don't follow those distinctions, or maybe those distinctions aren't real for them. So, you know, it's a really, I just think it's time, Stephen. I really do. I think we have to, we really, it'd be great if we could kind of be just more adult and rather than trying to get everybody to think like we think, to just realize there's always going to be difference. There is sexual difference. You know, I have to say, going back to the conference, this conference was mind blowing for me because Reed, who you also know, and I'm sure he's been on.
Oh yes.
I love Reed. And Reed is very very interesting. Yeah, he's got some beautiful takes on things. But what he's most phenomenal about is bringing people together. And one of my favorite meditations of the entire weekend was Barbara Corrales doing a meditation on releasing the mythology of gender.
Yes.
And wow, was that liberating and mind-blowing. And I think that's where Tantra has it incorrect. Because there is no one Tantra. There is no Neo-Tantra. There is no, you know, this way, that way, ancient Tantra. It's irrelevant. There is, though, human sexuality.
Yes.
That's what there is. That's the constant. That thing is cross-cultural. Tantra is not cross-cultural. I mean, yeah, there are different cultures that have their sexual rituals. I'm not saying that, but, you know, that's us claiming it. What I'm saying, the thing that is universal is human sexuality. You know how I know that? Because people are fucking. See, that's the thing that we're missing. That's the thing that all of us educators are missing. We're missing the fact that sex is happening regardless of your bullshit mythology. Regardless of what you're teaching or educating, sex is happening. And whether we're here or not, sex is happening. See, that's the thing. The unifying thing is that sex is happening. And how do I know that? Because our population doubled. It went from 2.5, nearly 3 billion, to 6 billion people in less than 50 years, and we are on track to double that again in the next 25 years.
Wow.
What does that mean? That means that people are fucking.
People are still having sex.
Lots. Yeah, exactly. Lots and lots and lots and lots of sex. Unfortunately, a lot of that sex involves guilt and shame and rape and coercion and, you know, all kinds of craziness. But the bottom line is people are having sex.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think we can all benefit from standing back and realizing that, you know, we don't have a tiger by the tail. The tiger has us. It's called sex. You know, and you can either start to kind of make that reality more of your friend and relax into that and open to that and, you know, just kind of get comfortable with the fact that those energies are active in your life. And regardless whether you think, you know, oh my God, I should only be living out of my heart chakra, well, you know, why do you think that? You think that because of some crazy bucket two mythology.
Right.
So, you know, we got some, we've, it's an interesting thing. So anyway, getting back to the conference and Reed and Barbara.
I love Barbara.
It was really, I love her. She's incredible. And man, does she challenge, you know, your kind of unconscious mythologies about sexuality and sexual orientation. You know, beautiful. In fact, I'm going to be recording a meditation in the near future just about that, you know, kind of like helping people extract themselves out of this gender thing. Because here's my bomb for the night. I am beginning to think that the whole idea of any kind of sexual differences between men and women, like the whole idea of masculine, feminine, like that whole thing, I think is a load of bullshit. And I think that we have another mythology that has, you know, kind of grabbed us and thrown us around and we didn't even know that it was there. And between her and hanging out with Betty and a few other speakers, I don't know. I'm really starting to question if our whole ideas of men and women and how kids are raised actually coming from, you know, religious and moral mythologies that we've been, that we've grown into. So I'm sitting with it. This is new, but that's how I do things. I just sort of say, you know, maybe I'm wrong about that. And I think eliminating this whole idea of masculine and feminine and eliminating this whole idea of sexual difference will probably do us more good than not. And so that's kind of what I've been playing with lately is just laying all that stuff down because, you know, everything that's written about sexuality is divided into this kind of masculine and feminine and, you know, men are this and women are that. And I think a lot of that damage was done with mythological books like, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Like we've run the danger of being sex educators and creating distinction don't exist.
Right.
And creating problems where there are none and then acting by believing what we believe or thinking how we think we can solve that problem. You know, but really that's a marketing issue. That's how people sell their shit.
Okay, good. Now this is what I want to focus on, and I definitely want to have you back. Well, I want to have you back anyway, but this topic, I think, this is the biggest bomb yet. So, first of all, let us go. Let us arm the warheads, arm the torpedoes, and drop the torpedo now. Because hearing all this stuff, especially all the David Dida material out there, and you know, and a man is this, and a woman is that. I really think I'm going to see it now. I think it's all bullshit.
It is absolutely. It's a load of bullshit. And I'm going to take it a step further. I think it's the kind of bullshit that's actually hurting people more than it's helping people.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say it, guys, but a lot of this stuff, because, you see, for me, I talk to people privately. See, I get paid to keep secrets.
Mm.
People call me and, you know, I'm who speaks to the Tantra educators. I'm the one who speaks to the teachers and counsels the teachers, and I hear what they're thinking about. And the bottom line is everybody's asking the same question, which is some version of, you know, we're wondering about, am I normal? Are my genitals normal? Is my penis normal? Is my vagina normal? Is my sexual desire normal? Is it, you know, where am I? Am I normal? Show me I'm normal. Do I fall into normal? And it's, you know, it's a load of crap. And you know, data stuff, oh, my goodness, please, you know, give me a break, man. But he's a good marketer. And a lot of the folks that have their material out there are really good marketers. And so it, you know, it goes out there. And I think that's what's so beautiful. I'm really trying to figure out how to incorporate more of Barbara's work, like her thoughts about things a little bit. Not her mythological stuff, but just the, you know, the basic idea of questioning gender and what you think you know about gender. And that's where if you apply that thinking, there's so much material about masculine polarity and feminine polarity and the healthy masculine and the healthy feminine, all this really bullshit, man, that is not helping anybody. And it's time that we, you know, I think it's time to just kind of like maybe start asking the question, do we really know what we think we know? I think the answer is no.
Right.
I think that the Tantra, you know, the funny thing about the Tantra people, a lot of the folks in the sexual industry is they act like they have it all together, but when it comes right down to it, I mean, they have the same problems everybody else has. People are fucked up about sex and their sexuality, and, you know, what happens if we start to remove all of that drama and all of that mythology? Who are you if you're not all of that story?
Absolutely. This has like been such, this is absolutely great, and I really applaud you because, you know, I just keep hearing all this stuff over again, and it sounds like just such a rehash of the 1950s. And I know at some point it is a game, and it can be played as a game. But, you know, I have a real, I can't see it. I can't relate to it.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think that's a good thing. I think that I hope that more and more people come to the place where they don't relate to it. Because by people kind of speaking up about this stuff and sort of saying, you know, that just doesn't work for me, it'll force us to change or update our mythologies a little bit. And I think it's time. I think it's time to just, you know, really start asking, you know, living just a more adult, sexually adult, spiritually adult life where you, you know, you're not just always running for the protection of mommy and daddy's story or the guru story or the, you know, something, oh, well, this person, Osho, has opened my eyes. I mean, you know, I'm really going to be pissing people off if I start talking about Osho. But the gist of it is, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you can learn about sexuality reading Charlie Brown. You know, you can learn about sexuality reading Snoopy. You can learn about sexuality reading Wired Magazine. I mean, it's like nobody has the corner on the truth about sexuality. I think those people that think they do are farther from it than anybody else. Because they're that much more dangerous, if you will, because they think they've got it all figured out. And nobody does. I defy anybody. You can bring anybody in on this show. Anytime. If you ever want to have a face-to-face, I would love to. With somebody who thinks they've figured it all out about sex. I'd love to hear that discussion.
Absolutely. And we're going to do that, and I definitely want to continue this line, particularly about gender and male and female. But as of right now, I have to thank Lawrence for being here once again for another outstanding program. And my brother, I'm so happy to be talking to you tonight. And you know, I want to do this. if we can do it next week, would be great for me, about gender and all this stuff, yeah, and male-female relations. So please, everybody, go to lawrencelanoff.com. Check it out. Check out his material. Check out his different websites.
Well, thanks, Stephen. I really appreciate, you know, being here. And if anybody is feeling brave enough to actually, you know, come to a workshop, all that information is available on acourseinfreedom.com. So.
Absolutely. So please go there, and I'll also be putting it up. Once again, my thanks to Lawrence Lanoff, the Wild Tantra Man. He did it again. He always does, and I'm always happy to have him. And he will be back. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you've been listening to Mondo Eros live on BBSRadio.com. Thank you, and good evening, folks.